Welcome back, or welcome to the best podcast. Well, I used to make jokes like the best podcast you're listening to right now, but I flippin' love my podcast, and I'm really proud of it. And I'm really proud, and I get a huge buzz when someone I don't really know, I just see mention me in some Facebook group, and you know, I'll throw a comment and say, oh, I've got a podcast, and they'll always podcast called, and some random will go, guys, podcasts are the best. And that happened last week. So to that person, you're special, and I love you. Tiger Woods is done. Done, I say. I mean, 1,000 people have said that over the last 5 years, and then he went and won the Masters. And there's been a lot of comment about Tiger's schedule, so we're going to chat a bit about that. We're also going to talk golf swing. And I don't get into techie golf stuff very often about the golf swing. I could, but it bores the shit out of me. You know, my credentials are I've got a phys ed degree. As part of that, we studied phys ed, We studied biomechanics, not just in golf, across a number of sports. And I feel that gives me an edge in my knowledge on a lot of the so-called golf biomech experts who don't know anything about biomech outside of the world of golf. And I don't talk about it because it bores the shit out of me and it makes golf sound more complex than it is. But there's a time and a place. And a true genius can make the complex clear. And let me show you during this podcast that I am not a true genius. But when you're searching for a proper online golf guru, do bear that in mind, that a true genius or a true expert will be able to make something very complex sound very simple without watering it down too much. There's always going to be a little oversimplification. But as long as people understand the topic enough to capture the essence of it in a simple comment without changing that content, that's definitely a step towards genius. Anyway, as you might hear today, I'm driving my beast of a Land Rover Discovery diesel around, and yeah, this car's on its way out, so it's almost a memorial for me to do the podcast in the Land Rover, because might be one of the last big drives I do in the Land Rover, although we've not bought a car to replace it. I've got my eye on a couple. I heartily recommend a Land Rover to anyone who doesn't need a car for their everyday drive. They are so much fun to drive. They look so awesome. But, fuck me, they can take a lot of work to keep on the road. So we're looking for another big 7-seater. Because, you know, fuck the environment. No, because we've got 3 kids and a dog, and occasionally we need to move them all at the same time. Anyway, Tiger's done, right? We all knew with the work he had done on his back, he could not play a full TGA Tour schedule. And he played a kind of two-thirds schedule last year, and I hoped that might have been enough. But it looks like that was too much for him. And do you know what? That's fine. Because there is a model for Tiger's career. There's two people, both highly respected. One, there is no higher respect given. And the other, well, pretty close, you know. And they are Benjamin Hogan. Benny, I like to call him. And Benny had a big car accident and played a really reduced kind of 7-game-a-year schedule. And like won 5 of them 1 year. Including majors, right? So that's serious delivery. Because I think, and this is almost touching on the science stuff, what one can't underestimate is the physical exertion of playing 72 holes in 4 days and warming up and practicing to keep and refine your game to tournament level is not to be underestimated. Not many amateur golfers have played 4 days back to back, and not many amateur golfers these days have walked a 7,500+ yard course 4 days back to back, and not many amateurs these days have walked a 7,500 yard course that's hilly and designed to be tough. And what even fewer golfers have done is walk that hilly long course 4 days on the trot, put in at least one full 18 practice, and then done the warm-up and prep to keep your game super sharp, even if that's just on the putting green, all of which Tiger's doing. Even the physio he'll be putting himself through to keep his swing oiled would take it out of you. If any of you have been to a serious physiotherapy session, often it's not like going for a nice massage, man. You can walk out of them exhausted. I've only done it once or twice, and it hurt, but you know, I imagine Tiger's used to that. But it's actually physically quite demanding. And put that on top of playing 5 rounds of golf in 6 days, putting in the range time to keep so you can come out on the first tee each day and nail it, or at least for 4 of those games. Putting in the range time so your wedges are sharp in those conditions at that altitude, at those temperatures on that grass. Putting in the putter time so you've got a complete confidence and you've got a feel for the green. These things don't happen by accident. Even for somewhere Tiger appears to be completely comfy, let's say Augusta, he's still going to have to put in the putting green time. He's still going to have to put in the wedge time, because he's got to relearn them every week from wherever his previous tournament was. And sure, it'll be quicker than the first time he went to Augusta, but that's not negating that work to zero. So if Tiger can play 7 serious games a year, and you're talking kind of majors, Ryder, President's Cup, Tiger's tournament plus one, that's his schedule these days. I mean, of course, if he's playing such a limited number of events, he probably won't be in the Ryder or President's Cup. But then, you know, he would have put in Bay Hill, he would have put in Sawgrass. He might put in one of the cash cow events, you know, Abu Dhabi, Dubai, Saudi Arabia, China, you know, coronavirus withstanding. You know what I'm saying. You know, playing a seriously limited number of events, maybe in limited fields, that Premier League of golf is going to be looking mighty tempting to him. Especially if they drop 200 mil just for him turning up. I mean, he doesn't need the money, but his legacy isn't cheap. He's not thinking about him. He's not even thinking about his kids. He's thinking about building a legacy for his grandkids financially. And don't blame him for that. You know, that's where he's at. He wants his grandkids to have a comfortable life he's had. His great-grandkids, his nieces, his nephews. And I get that. I really get that. He wants his great-grandkids to still be talking about his legacy. As well. So the foundation, the golf courses, all of that sort of thing is going to be important to him. And a limited schedule, limited field events might look mighty awesome. Especially if he's got a whiff that's going to kick off and compete with some of the major tours. Like it could kill, those Premier Golf Leagues could kill the Euro and Asian China tours. Or consolidate them. You've got PGA Tour plus one. it would be fun to see the knock-on effects from that, because I like the disruption. And golf needs it. I really want Tiger to win again. I'd make a sex week if he won Augusta again, because it's just, I just love it. As much as I loved seeing Patrick Reed, the nicest guy in golf, you know, win the other week, especially seeing him beat Bryson. Not that I hate Bryson, I love him. I'm wearing a Bryson cap right now, because I think Bryson has done something to the game of golf, and his legacy is yet to pay off. But I do think Bryson DeChambeau is probably going to have a bigger legacy to the game than someone like Patrick Reed. Put them, you know, equal footings as golfers. I know Paddy's won a major, but Bryson's got a major in him, at least one. When Bryson's on, it takes a lot to beat him, right? And he's proven against the highest quality fields in like the FedEx that he can win under pressure down the stretch when his game's on. Particularly with Bryson, I think it's his putting. I think his putting and wedge play wobbles a bit when his game's not A1. And regular events on tour, you just can't have a wobbly short game, and that's why he struggles. Although his outcomes look similar to someone like Justin Thomas, who's either on or he's off. I think it's very different reasons. I think Justin, and I've not looked at the numbers here for Justin, I think Justin's wedge game and short game is pretty consistent. His putting and wedge game, of course he has hot weeks and, you know, all of that, but I think he's got a pretty high standard. For Justin Thomas, he's just firing at everything when he's on and makes it. The guy rarely is going to grind out 3 69s to win. Not that he couldn't, it's just not who he is or his style. He's going to shoot 371s and a 59, and that's just him, and it takes all sorts, and I would much rather someone watch shoot 159 than 469s. Let's just package those thoughts about Tiger and by extension Premier League of Golf and what it takes to win an event and different types of ways to win a pro event. What does that mean for you guys? That's a good question that's popped into my head. What does it mean? What does the insights into what a tour pro does to win a tournament, what does that mean for Joe 14 handicapper? Here's what it means. Someone, no one, no golf commentator, no golf expert, no golf fan would challenge the fact that different tour pros, you know, there's a, let's say 50 tour pros globally across many tours who could win easily with no shocker any week. Almost then, that means there's 50 different approaches to getting the job done. You've got the guys like Justin Thomas who'll shoot 59 and then scrape it around in par 3 other times and win at 10 under or whatever. You've got the grinders who will put in 69, 69, 69 and be like T10, and they'd normally sneak another 69 and, you know, and have a good finish, or sneak out a 66 and win the tournament. This sort of standard model. And the players that do that, I think there's a lot of players who fit that model, and each week there's probably 25 golfers in the world whose game's on form enough to deliver those results. You've got other guys who are somewhere between, right? You've got golfers who will grind out a win once or twice a year, but the rest of the year they're shocking. And there's a variety of reasons for that. Usually it's the putter. There's a lot of guys, think Henrik Stenson, who's Oosterhuizen, Adam Scott to a lesser extent, who can tee to green, their game doesn't change hugely. On the greens, though, they're only hot once or twice a year, and they really need to convert that into a win. Matt Fitzpatrick's another guy like that. No, he's the opposite. That guy, actually, he's the opposite. Matt Fitzpatrick, his normal is banging out 68s and 69s to come in the middle of the field on the European Tour. But the way he does that, he's missing greens all over the place. He's not too long either. But he's rolling in putts from everywhere. That's his normal. He just puts the lights out on everything. And then when he starts hitting greens and his putter's working, the guy's unbeatable. But he's not doing what Rory or someone's doing. He's not knocking three woods into a four. He's just knocking three woods into 30 feet, which looks pretty boring, then making the putt, which it delivers the same result, but it's not as spectacular. And we all know that, right? What does that mean for you? What does that mean for the average golfer? What does that mean for me? This is something I'm still learning in my game. What am I good at? And all of you know what you're good at. One of my favourite examples of playing to your strength is actually a tale of someone who didn't do that. Ian Baker Finch won the British Open in 91 at Birkdale. I was there to watch it happen. Until many years after did I realise. Afterwards, he wanted to keep his, world-beating form up. And he tried to do that by ironing out the weakness in his game, which was not being very long. He had a great putter and a great short game. He wasn't long off the tee. It failed. He spent so much time trying to get longer, his short game began to fall off. And he said, since not through, or you lose all your feel, he just didn't have time to practice. Even though he loved practicing his putting in his short game. So that's my advice for you, is often you might feel like, oh, I love it when I go to the range and I just hit 8 irons at that stick. Oh, I can hit 8 irons there all day, and I go to the golf course and I know if I'm 125 out, I pull my 8 iron and I can just drop one on the green and I don't have to worry about that. And do you know what? That story, that is me when I was a kid. Even when I was playing off about 18, or even a bit more, I never worried about hitting a green from inside 125. Like, it never crossed my mind that I would miss a green from there. And I wish I knew what my numbers were for that time in my life, because I rarely remember hitting a bad wedge shot. My standards were lower. I just wanted it on the green. But for a guy who's not a single figure golfer, an 18 handicap, that's good going. And I was never particularly short when I was a junior golfer playing off forward tees. I hit a lot of, I used to play a 3-wood most of the time. I hit a lot of 3-wood 8-iron in when I was a beginning golfer, which is now my grown-up version of driver wedge, which is what I hunt out all day long on a mid-range. If I can't hit driver, if I can't get to 100 yards, I try and get to whatever my pitching wedge number is for that. At that time, right now about 130. Play to your strengths. If you can't drive for shit, don't stress that out. Of course you've got to work on it and try and iron it out. But try and work a way that you can get straighter by practicing your strengths. I've talked about a lot how I try and practice my go-to wedge shot, which is a kind of comfy 80% wedge. I try and practice that with all my clubs, because I want to get that feel. Of course, I hit half the balls with my wedge or gap or sand wedge, my 55. But ultimately what I'm trying to do is just get this comfy swing that I know works across my bag. But I've got 2 or 3 clubs I really know it works with. I can't putt for tits. I'm trying to change that So I practice my putting, but I just practice two things, especially when I'm limited on time. I practice pace as much as I can, especially when I get to a new club or when I get to the club, because I don't play the same place twice in a row very often. And I try and roll in 8-footers. And that's my putting practice. That's so much of my putting practice. Because that's what's important to me, is being confident enough to make par if I balls up the chip. And, balls up the chip and put it to 8 feet and not 2 feet. And also, when I've got a long putt, because I feel like I struggle from like 200 out, is not through putting. Shots from 200 out, I think I might make that my focus this year. I haven't really worked on what I'm going to work on this season. Although I live in the Southern Hemisphere, I still think and play in a Northern Hemisphere season. I've only got 2 more Southern Hemisphere seasons to go. So after eight Southern Hemisphere seasons, why would I change that now? I keep going silent because I got to do a little bit of driving. You don't realize schools are kicking out here, and I don't want to kill a child. It's frowned upon even in Panama. And what's making most of my problems is crazy pedestrians and crazy taxis. But I think I'm all right now. Now, that leads nicely into something I've learned about my own game. And this is the development of an ongoing thought process. And that thought is, my golf swing has not changed since I was 14. I used to have a wild slice, and I hated it. I really hated my wild slice. That came to a head when I was playing golf. On a rare occasion, I was playing golf with my dad. We were on holiday in Somerset. We took my golf clubs, played golf, and that was fun. That was great, actually. I loved it. But I was smashing my 3-wood off the tee. It's probably just before I got into using a driver. But everything was a big slice. And that's not fun. And I decided to learn to force myself not to slice the ball off the tee and the rest of my shots. So somehow, and I know this is erroneous, this is wrong, I'd watched videos of Ben Hogan, and I saw his swing and thought he could do nothing other than hook the ball. I know this is wrong. He actually played a fade. Although his natural tendency was to draw, he tore himself out of that and changed it into a fade. So I tried to copy a Ben Hogan swing on my own, on the driving range. And I thought, super flat, super low ball flight, and I'm going to hit hook. So I'm going to hit hook, 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 hook. I'm going to teach myself how to play using a hook instead of using a fade. And I did. And it didn't take me long at all. It took me 2 or 3 days. It kind of broke my golf game for a while, because then I couldn't hit the ball to the right. All I had was this duck hook. And when I'm bad, that's all I've got today. What does that teach you? That my swing has not changed since then. And I wouldn't now know how to go back to my old slicey swing. Not that I don't slice, but I can certainly hit a swing where I know I take the right-hand side of the golf course out of play. And that is what I'm doing right now in my golf game. It's how I'm keeping my scores, at or below 80 without practicing too much. I'm just using some good common sense and making sure I only miss one way. And if there's trouble down the left, I just play super conservatively. I lay up as much as I can. I play, if it's off the tee, I play the longest club I can that I'm confident that I'm not going to miss left. And sometimes that is 5-iron. You know, and I'm quite happy to hit 2 5-irons into a par 4 if that's what it takes to make it on or next to the green in 2, give myself a solid look at par. Because I know, all things being equal, if there's trouble down the right, as there often is on a golf course, I can actually relax and open my shoulders and smash one out there 215, 220 with my driver. Because I don't have to worry about the right-hand side of the golf course. It's funny that I said open my shoulders there, because that's probably the one thing I can't do to avoid a slice. But you're with me. You know what I'm saying, listener. So what, you know, how does that translate for you? Here's a big idea. Accept the fact your golf swing's not going to change. If you've been playing golf 10 years, and you're not going to put in the long yards, the range time, and I'm talking hours per day for a week or so, or longer, your swing is not going to change. Just accept that. You can make your golf score lower with your golf swing as it is right now. Craig Parry, major champion in the 90s, described himself as the only 11 handicapper to win a major. He was paraphrasing or plagiarizing, I think, Johnny Miller commentating on him, because Johnny Miller hated his golf swing, and his golf swing isn't pretty, Craig Parry's. You know, it's been said countless times that there's 140 players on tour and 140 different golf swings, and only Adam Scott's is perfect. It's true, right? There's not one way to swing a golf club. There's one way to do few things in golf, and you can learn them without changing your golf swing. And one of the big lessons is don't miss in stupid places. If you struggle with a slice and there's water all down the right of the hole, you need to make sure, you need to make a decision, right? If you hit driver, you're probably going in that water. So what's the longest club you can hit and confidently not go in the water? Because you don't want to be a real dick. Like, don't be a dick and put driver in the water. But don't be a real dick and put 7-iron in the water and leave yourself playing 3 from the rough next to the lake, but you've got 210 in. You may as well be in the water with a driver. At least you're only going to have like 150 in or whatever. So the longest club, because 3 from the middle of the fairway from, let's say, 175, you're looking at 5 realistically, aren't you? 5 if it goes well. You hit 3 8-irons down there and you're on the green for 3. Hopefully you're looking at a much more makeable putt for par. And in reality, there's not many holes that you need to hit 3 8-irons in to get to the green. You can, and there's not so many holes in golf that are so tight you need to hit 8-iron off to avoid problems. There's a lot of holes you can hit 2 6-irons and be very close to the green. And then you're hopefully looking, if your short game works, paid off, at something less than 15 feet for par. And if you're playing off 18, that's good luck. That's a good luck for par. Because if you're playing off 18, that 15-footer for par is, if we're honest, not much longer as if you'd hit on driver wedge, missed on the fringe, fucked up the chip and left yourself a 12-footer. You know, what percentage difference is there in you making par? But the risk you've taken to get to that 12-footer over the 15-footer, you've put 6, 7, 8 on the cards to get there. Whereas if you've hit 2 6-irons down there, you may have put 6 on the card, but you're very unlikely to have put much higher than that. Own your swing, except it's not going to change. You can shoot lower scores with the swing you've got because golf is easy. The only people who tell you otherwise have a vested interest, usually in selling you golf lessons or instruction some way or another, or new golf gear. On the subject of new golf gear, my custom build from Orca Golf, which has taken too long due to my laziness and Alex's busyness, took a large step closer today. We made a decision on shafts and club heads. I just need to do some maths on picking some grips and swing weights based on a couple of benchmark clubs in my bag that are beautiful and perfect. Now, 30 minutes in, I've driven home from the market, so I think I'm going to call that a day. Thank you very much for your ears, guys. I love speaking to you so much. Drop me a line. Find me Golf Nerd Guy on Twitter. Find me on Facebook. Pretty easy to find. I'm called Guy Cross. I've got ginger hair and glasses. I'm an English teacher, and I do a bit of working golf still, sort of, indirectly. My amateur status is in question at the moment. Sorry, just driving under a tree, which sounds way less interesting than it actually was. Thanks for listening. Till next time. Goodbye.